My arms were held midway in this dream vision, and it was it was on my left arm, halfway between my shoulder and my elbow, and it was a very distinctive holding. And I heard a voice say to me, quote, "I am God Allah," end of quote. Time seemed to stand still for me, and I had not utilized the term Allah before, but it was clear to me that it was time for me to start using God Allah. Then I heard the voice again, and it was God Allah. He said to me, "Allow me to help you. Let me walk with you up to the temple." The dream three is entitled Walk Along with God. This was a different time, a different dream vision. God Allah, this is what I heard, loves us all, and that love and even greater than we can imagine. God's greatness is demonstrated in his gift of love for each of us. God's great love is highlighted by the forgiveness that God offers us. It is God's forgiveness that highlights, strengthens, and enhances his degree and greatness of love. In his forgiveness, God puts a lot more into pray and play than we can imagine. Dream Vision 13 was God's intended destiny for humankind. This might catch you a little strange. What is the highest goal for humankind? This again was in another dream vision. Stop and think. It will surprise you and maybe even shock you a bit, because here it is. The highest goal for humankind is for us to return to Eden. Yes, I believe that God's greatest prayer and wish is for us to return to Eden and live with him. God is happy. He loves and watches each and every one of us. God hears the wind in the air and feels the warmth of the earth. God knows well the power and glory of love. And the fourth dream vision that I displayed here is Dream Vision 18, Awakening to Heaven's Gate. Perhaps life leads us not just to give us thoughts of life, but also wonderment of what might be standing at Heaven's Gate. Fear and anger have no place in that presence, for goodness is stationed at Heaven's Gate. How pleasant it is to visit Heaven's Gate. As you step into Heaven's Gate, you instantly see love that abounds everywhere. And then I had a closing note.
Do you want to read that too?
Okay. There are many secrets in our world. As time passes, we learn and are taught things that are important in our lives. I hope you find dream visions both helpful and spiritual. With love, Clarence Graves, Mir Ali. Thank you.
Thank you. And when I read that last night, as I said, I read it right before I went to sleep. And I said to Premigita, "Did you read it yet?" And she said, "No." I said, "Oh, you must read it before you sleep." And I'll tell you, it fits so beautifully with what we're studying. You know, that the source and the returning to the source and love, how important that is. And sometimes I have to say, it's loving people from afar too. Sometimes not everyone's so easy to love. And sometimes they don't want to receive our love, but to wish them well. They may even wish us harm. You can still love them. I know of what I speak. I know of what I speak. So, stay tuned. about fall camp and spring camp. Watch for Clarence Nerlim on the schedule.
Yes, I got both of them there.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's... Okay, was I already at my place? So as you know, we've been working with Yahuk, and I feel it must be working, because in my conversations with people, I'm finding them to be very deep and very honest conversations, and that means there's trust, and that means there's love when we can do that. I was once asked to be part of a little conference. It was called 360 Degree Women. And you may know the author. She's actually quite profound. She is a philosopher, and she studied through traditional academia, you know, all the Eastern and Western philosophy. And then she used that to turn back on that, to re-examine it. So she's very much involved in body awareness, you know, like our body awareness and body image. And she's been writing about this for some time, especially relative to young women, but it's starting, you know, that's all starting to change. We're having that issue with young men. And she's written the book Unbearable Weight, and she's also written historic, but about Marie Antoinette and different historic figures. The point is that I'm trying to get to, just to give you a little bit of background, is, you know, she was kind of the keynote of our conference, and she said, until you're willing to sit in a group of people in public and tell your deepest, darkest secret, you're not really free. I think about that a lot, you know. It also gives testament to how truthful we are with oneself, and that is, I think, the process of healing. When we can say it out loud and we don't feel so much shame around it, then we know that that's part of our wounded self, and we can move on from that. We can really begin the healing. I'm just going to read this one Rumi story again, and then we'll move on to today's teaching. And I also want you to know, if you need to leave for another class, that's fine. I'm going to continue until it's finished. And there's going to be a special joining of hands, you might say, after this. So if you'd like to be part of that and witness to that, and sort of renew, you know, your own initiation vows, please stay and with us, okay? Amina's coming into our circle, so welcome her as your sister. Yeah, very happy about that. So, Murshid says, as Rumi has written in the Masnavi, where the soul is likened to a reed flute, why does the music of the flute appeal to you? Because it laments, it cries, it longs for that spirit. Nerlim described it as the gate of heaven, I would think. Said there's all forgiveness and love. And the gate of heaven, we can think of it as some place we're returning to, or we return every day. And the gate of heaven is here in the heart of us. Because it laments, it cries, it longs for spirit, for that being which was its stem, the source from which it was cut. The reed was cut away from its stem, and holes were made in its heart. That made it cry. It cries with longing to join the stem. And so, remembering that image that Murshid gave us, the sun and the rays of the sun, you know, that is described here as the reed moving away from its source. But where are we on that line between the unmanifest and the manifest? Can we stand at a place in equipoise where we can see both? Murshid goes on to say, So it is with every soul, this reed getting cut from its stem. The restlessness, the uncomfortable feeling of every soul is always for one and the same reason, though each one gives a different reason. This is like our life. You know, when you listen to people, you see the story is really so similar. We're kind of really, we're in our Viking boat together, all heading to the same place. It may be slightly different characters playing in one's life, but believe me, we all share a lot in common with each other, more than we know. So he says, always for one and the same reason, though each one gives a different reason. The one would like to possess earthly wealth. Another suffers from the contempt of friends. Another cannot approach his beloved. Another has troubles at home. Another has a case in court. But in reality, there's only one trouble. And that trouble is the sorrow of the spirit. I've heard it said, maybe it's, again, Baba Hari Das that said, it's misidentification of self. What self are we identifying with? You know, the mask, the facade, the thing that the world reacts to, you know, the personality, you know, the ego constructs, or the really true eternal self. Misidentification of self. As it is the inclination of every river to go and meet the sea, so it is the inclination of every soul to go and meet the spirit. Be melting snow, wash yourself of yourself. Be melting snow. Rumi describes it, doesn't he, as the little you'll be able to help me, I know, sir, on this, because you're kind of our scholar in this. Does he talk about the sugar doll or the salt dolls, that the sugar doll gets dropped in the water and dissolves?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that, you know. Can we, I mean, even, you know, my Rinpoche, when he picks up a piece of bread, like the way he picks it up is like this, like it's a beautiful offering, and he looks at it, and I always think, God, what is he seeing in that piece of bread, you know? He just looks at it like this, and then, you know, like his every gesture is almost like a mudra, and then he gives a piece of butter, and he butters it, and I'm thinking, you know, he's doing this as a real contemplation of a meditation. You know, it's not just awareness. I mean, he's seen something in that. I remember one day he taught us that to think when we take food in, that this is the mandala, you know, and to say the offering mantra, Ram Yam Kam, Ram Yam Kam, Ram Yam Kam, when you're offering that food. And then likewise, when you poop it out, he said, when you flush the toilet, snap your fingers to call all the hungry beings to feast and flush and say, Om Mani Padme Hum.
Oh, Lord.
Like offer it in a prayer. Because someone's always eating or feeding off of something else. You know, and to be mindful of that's very beautiful, I think.
There's this Zari philosophy in Italy of the seven...
The seven auspicious offerings?
No, it's in science. That every different type of being in science consumes the waste of the last being.
Yeah.
So that if we were completely in balance, there'd be no waste. So my other expertise is I'm a septic system expertise.
Yeah.
And it makes me so sad that anybody ever puts anything like this new sanitary soap. Because in the septic system, all your poop is eaten up by all the guys that need it.
Right.
And it never accumulates, really.
Right. Yeah,
so
it's really
a blessing.
Yeah, that's
like
exactly it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I mean, and that's important to remember, you know. It's like we make this joke that my mom, you know, nothing neat was ever wasted. And that was a good thing, you know.
Did you ever walk through the forest and see poop any everywhere?
No.
Right. Somebody's using it. It's like in India and Morocco and all those places, they accumulate the poop and then they make these beautiful, they look like tents, but they're just a conical shape of poop, and then they put straw all over it and they preserve it for fire, you know, they use
fire,
it for fire and all kinds of things. So anyway, yeah, poop can be good. And we're kind of poop masters, you know,
yeah.
That, right?
I feel good at it.
Yeah, we're really good at it. But Mom used to say, now don't waste your food. There's hungry children in India, you know. And then it was like, did you know, Mom, we'd be going to India and feeding hungry children when you said that? But it's so true. And, you know, and I always think it's really not being wasted. You either throw it out and let somebody eat it, or you throw it in your mouth, which sometimes isn't all that good for you, and then you poop it out anyway. So one way or another, it's going out. Mershit's words again. At this time, now remember, he passed away in 1927. At this time, when materialism prevails everywhere, there seems to be great hunger after truth. It is natural that people should hunger after truth. The very fact that there is so much materialism shows that every soul feels uncomfortable and begins to long for spiritual attainment. But how do they pursue spiritual attainment? Generally, there are two kinds of seekers. One, there is one who is curious, who wonders if there's anything or not. If it is really true that there is a soul and a hereafter. They look for some phenomenon in order to try to prove it. They use psychometry, palmistry, clairvoyance, and all such means. There may be hundreds and thousands wondering about in delusion, looking for phenomena. Probably you've all had some experiences as you go along on the path. Maybe your clairvoyance opens up, or your clairaudience, or even your empathy. You know, you start to feel things in a different way. Or maybe you also have dreams that seem symbolic, or nature reveals something. And when I would share some of these things with Mershita Vira, looking for an interpretation from her, she'd always say, "What does it mean, Nuria?" And I'd say, she goes, get beyond the phenomenon. Seek to know the message within. So beyond phenomenon, beyond the rational mind, there's a knowledge that's attempting to be revealed. That's the Alim, the Nur Alim. That's why he got the name. And there may be another one who is perhaps more intellectual, who reads books on occult, science, often because he or she has seen them recommended in newspapers or heard it on Oprah, I'll say here. And in the end, he will surely, she will surely become more and more confused. Is this a way of learning? It is not enough that from childhood one has to learn in school, and after having read all those books, all that there is to be read, at what does one arrive? What does one arrive? At what does one arrive? Okay. Any other thoughts about that?
Frustration.
It's closer to what Mershit says.
There's something more beyond that.
Yeah.
It goes back to what you said, what's behind that.
Yeah. Yeah, Mershit says And what does one arrive? And at what does one arrive? At confusion. You come to the place where the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And Joe says it. I don't. Perhaps someone knows. Was it Einstein that said that our knowledge goes only as far as our tools that measure it? Is that a, or is that just Joe being brilliant?
Very much as a materialistic perspective.
Yeah. Well, and I think in a lot of ways that's true, though. I mean, in what we take as knowledge. I mean, you know that, and as a scientist, Rabia, that you know we kind of have these finite ways of describing things, and we feel comfortable with that, and therefore we. I remember being at a conference. It was a design conference in Aspen, but it was we had invited in some MIT computer scientists and people from the engineering department who were actually brilliant and very spiritual. And at that point, I think they were, you know, I think mathematics had gotten up to the sixth dimension, but visually we could only express things in the fourth dimension. But it's like people, we had like four-dimensional cubes, but you know our reality is only in three dimension, and it's like you have to like unlearn how you're seeing the world to see that it's like a 16-sided cube in the fourth dimension. And you know it's an interesting. Have you all read Flatlands? Mm-hmm. You know it's that story. Like oh my God, that circle thinks it's a sphere. Let's put it in jail. It's crazy. Let's take the psychiatrist. Let's take the minister. Let's take the you know because they're totally crazy. It's like how could there be a third dimension? You know it's a great analogy and they reference that actually at the conference. So those are very interesting phenomena. You know things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. So again, Murshid says, after all this reading, all of this schooling, where do we arrive? And his answer is at confusion. One does not know which is false and which is true. We're kind of going through that now, aren't we, in the media with this notion of false media, which makes you then mistrust everything. I remember the Dalai Lama and Carl Sagan met. Do you all know about that meeting? And so Dalai Lama was explaining their cosmology. You know, there's six realms of beings, kind of like the seven realms that you were talking about, Sura. They have a very complex cosmology around that. And Carl Sagan's describing the universe according to his understanding. And Dalai Lama said, well, you know, we're flexible. We're willing to change things if you know we understand them to be different. You know that kind of open-mindedness. Like we don't have to be so fixated on concepts, and you know we're adaptable. So Murshid goes on to say, learning is one thing, and unlearning is another, and therein lies simplicity. That unlearning of I have a dear friend who's in intuitive truly and she's like Alim, her name's Alima, and she has helped countless number of people, famous people that live on the street, just incredible gift of intuitive faculties. And one of the practices that she does is she takes balls of yarn that are tangled and she untangles them while imagining the knots of the mind getting untangled. Mm-hmm. You know, but also that patience and just mindfulness to doing that, or thread, you know, or chant, you know, sometimes jewelry can get tangled up, you know, you try to get it. Unlearning. And I know the only way she can do that is when she's empty of herself. She experiences the past, the present, and the future. But you can't do that when we're filled with our concepts of self. And that's not an easy thing to help unlearn. And unlearning means rising above what we call worldly learning. Very often what we call knowledge keeps our soul away from knowledge of itself. So our knowledge keeps our knowledge away from ourself, our true self. A knowledge which is most essential because the learning acquired by learning is very complex. So again, very often what we call knowledge keeps our soul away from the knowledge of itself. A knowledge which is most essential because the knowledge acquired by learning is very complex. People think that it is simple. People think that if it is simple, it cannot be truth. They value what is complex. But in this way, by one's own tendency, one covers over the truth in oneself, which is one's own being. Pivalayat used to say, see yourself as a being of light. And he would, remember? You remember? He gave a lot of teachings on light. I think you can still find those now. I think they're still available through universelle.net.
I have like 40 tapes in my house.
I know. I just saw Mikael at the Ability. He's like, I've given up the business, but I have all kinds of tapes if you want them. I said, you might have to send them. I don't know if I'm going to have room in my suitcase. But I think they're now audible. His meditations are there. There may be some video, universelle.net. And he gives a lot of teaching. I mean, he had a major concentration on light. And so, you know, imagine, you know, he'd say, see yourself as a being of light, you know, as if we were... I mean, it really is what right, Rabia? You know that, right? Can you explain it to us a little bit more? I mean, you're from physics. I mean, what are we? What are we made of? What do we look like when we're not looking like ourselves?
That is beyond the beyond. I guess according to physics, everything breaks down into everything that's matter really is energy. That kind of comes back. But one of Einstein's big insights is that this stuff and energy is all kind of the same thing. And if you think about the Big Bang, so the Big Bang is where everything that's in the universe now, in the past, was in a tiny little dot. So you, me, the air, the cabin, the next galaxy, everything was there. But not, it couldn't be as matter, so it's all energy. And then as everything expanded, it contracted into matter. Kind of like this, you know, spirit is water, snow, or matter is snow.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's literally true.
Pivalayat would say, imagine that moment of the Big Bang. Then the universe unfurls itself. Remember how he would speak? It would unfurl itself in every direction. And in that way, the past is in the future. It's true, though. If it's moving out that way, what happened here is there now.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's looking back at itself. It's very much what we're talking about here. Science does describe it. And we know that, some of you that studied the new physics, so to speak. And the new physicists talk about it in a poetical way. I mean, they really, it is like a poetry to them, you know. I love them. I love smart people, is what I like. I always tell my female students, don't go for the jock, go for the goofy looking guy in the, you know, in the corner with the pins in his pocket.
Yeah, we need to have Einstein here.
Yeah.
I realized Einstein was alive when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Now.
One of the city can.
So the last practice that kind of closes this circle and the one that we'll take up in our group that continues with it, again, I always recommend if you want to take up a particular practice, talk to your guide about it, is that sequence of Nor, Aleem, and then Huk. Nor is... If you were here the first day, you heard Kabir say that he was the one that thought of my name, right? Were you here?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that, you see, he's so subtle. Sometimes you kind of don't. And he's quiet, you know? Oh my, he's really special. Try to get a little of that juice. And so Murshida Vera, she put me through my paces in like 24 hours because her rule is, you know, it always was, kind of make someone ask three times for initiation. And so she made me do that in a very condensed period. And then she sat me down and she said, "What do you think it is that you need most in your life?" Now she already had, Kabir had already told her the name Noria. And I looked at her, and I didn't have to think about it, and I said, "Light." And she said, "Why is it, you know, because people often say, oh, I need love, I need whatever." I said, "Light." And she said, "Why do you think it is that you need light?" And I said, "Because light is what will illuminate my life and my path." And she said, "Well, then your name's Noria." And I said, "What?" You know, there was somebody else there that was traveling with her to Arkansas, and the woman had to keep repeating the name so I could hear it. You know, it's like, "Maria? No, Noria." And it wasn't until years later, I think Murshida Vera had passed, that Kabir told me he was the one that had come up with that name before I had had that conversation with Murshida Vera. And he kept that kind of a secret to us till a special moment when he shared it. I thought that was very revealing of his subtlety. So Nor, the way Murshida Vera described it, is the light that comes from within that illuminates all things. It's not an external light. It's a self-awareness light, the light of that self-illumination. Right? Aleem is said to be the all-knowing from which nothing can be hidden. And Yahuk is truth. So no, I mean, what about that for a great sequence of practices? So I'm going to recommend that we do each one of those wazifas individually, and then we do them as a sequence, okay? So when we're doing Ya Aleem, think about that source, that divine source, which radiates within, and like Pir Vilayat would say, he'd sit like this, he always had this posture. Think of oneself as a being of light. So imagine that, but that being is self-illuminating awareness that not only helps you, but can be cast towards other things to help other beings, okay? Check our time. Okay, we're doing good. So let's just do that on, we'll tone that word. And we'll do Ya Nor. We'll do it 11 times. Ya Nor. Ya Nor. Ya Yeah. And now we'll work with Ya'alim. The all-knowing, the one from which nothing can be hidden and everything is revealed, Ya'alim. You may want to experiment with the tone, Aleem. Let the sound come up, go higher on the E, can resonate here. Can someone give us a note and get us going, Krimagita? And let me just say that we don't need to linger on ya. There's that tendency to do it. We need to move on to the wasifa and make sure at the end, can you feel the vibration up here when you do it? Make sure you close your lips and do the it's like the ow. You know that saying? So let's start again. Ya'alim. 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 So let's do the three wazifa together. The first 34 will say Ya Nur, Ya Alim, Ya Haq. the second 33 we'll whisper, and the last 33 we'll do on the breath. I'll remind you again. Oh gosh, is that that horn? Okay, is it?
No, that's
oh, good, okay. You breathe in, Yanur. I don't mean to take anyone's experience away, but I can share what happens for me. Sometimes that light, I feel that light, that ray, and I do allow that light to enter here, Noor, and then kind of pour through my being. Aleem, you'll concentrate here, and then Huck, you'll bring to your solar plexus. So for the benefit of the recording, concentrating on Noor at the crown, Aleem at the forehead, and Huck at the deep heart solar plexus area. Something Murshid Hidayat really taught me was, even with eyes closed, the direction of the eyes can give great emphasis to where the consciousness is. So when you're doing Noor, you know, let it sort of let your eyes go as if they're above the head, really, almost looking out and drawing the light from the source, the light of the universe, into your being. Aleem, look at the center, you know, almost like you're looking. You know, can you see what I'm doing? I'm kind of looking almost cross-eyed up at the center. But you can do it closed eyes. And then Huck, you know, let your eyes come down. So let the eyes, even closed eyes, closed-eyed, direct your consciousness. Again, the practices, we're saying them aloud and we're toning them now. If you're doing them in a park or something, do them silently, but hear them inwardly. Yanur, Yaleem, Yahak. Yanur, Yaleem, Yahak. Yanur. Keep it going, please. Very good. Always can do more. Just don't do less. Thank you. Could you feel it? When I do my practices every morning, I imagine you're all with me. Huh? You don't want to see me at that time in the morning. Sorry, am I mumbling?
No, you're just making you talk funny.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's funny.
Excuse me. I was very ill until rather recently. I got ill in Greece, and I just have taken a long time to recover, so sometimes this is happening. But I see you there. It gives me a lot of courage and confidence to do the practices and keep going. And I hope when you do your practices, you feel the same. One time I asked Pir Hadayat, they were staying with us, and Aziza got very ill. Very ill. My GP is a friend of mine from high school, and you know, I just called him and I said, I have a visitor from, you know, out of the country, and we need some immediate care. He took us right in and ran tests and everything on her. And she was in bed a good part of their visit. And he, at times, even kind of delirious. And I said to Murshid Hidayat, when a person can't do their practices themselves, us doing the practices for them, is it of benefit? And he said, of course it is. So that's to say that I hope you're doing your practices, but even if you're not, I'm doing them and hoping that you'll benefit. Those people that have shared with me that they sometimes have trouble with the discipline and regularity of practice, that have taken up the regularity and discipline of practice, have really been their own testament. They didn't have to believe me, but they had to test me, and they see what a great benefit those practices have been in their lives. When Mom was real ill, she didn't have her prayer books with her, but she had her rosary beads. And she says, I don't think I even can pray anymore. But she says, I always feel the presence of Jesus with me. And so she used to just use her rosary and just recite Jesus, 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 Jesus. And then she would pray for us, and she'd do on the rosary 10, you know, like, you know, she always called me Steph or Stephanie, Jesus, Stephanie, Jesus, Stephanie, Jesus, Stephanie, Jesus, Stephanie. And then she'd go to my sister, Jesus, Cecily, Jesus, Cecily, Jesus. I know, Stephanie and Cecily, right? We became Stessily. And then, you know, she'd go through Joe, and she'd go through, you know, different people that had asked her to pray for them. And that was her kind of mantra. And that was the thing that kept her going. Mm-hmm. Very simple. And you know, I think for people that are really ill, Jesus is, let me think, when we think about what Jesus went through. And, you know, I have such great confidence in those saints that have had that unit of experience with Jesus. And I think of the suffering that Jesus went through. And by comparison, how my sufferings are really kind of nothing. And then I say, I can have courage. These are small crucifixions in life. And I join with, you know, Jesus in that. You know, it gives you strength, it gives you courage, you know. And when people are mean to us, and they are, sometimes for no reason, we say, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Just like Jesus did, hanging on the cross. Pir Vilayat used to say, why is Pir Vilayat coming in so much? He's like, hello, Pir. Anyway, he's just saying, Jesus isn't just hanging on the cross, he's dancing on the cross in resurrection. You know, it was that, it's that, when we were talking about the negative and the positive resurrection, yes, the day before maybe even, and that's kind of that concept, you know, that total surrender, that moment of total absolute surrender is the moment of resurrection. They're beautiful. We're going to do a short version of, we did already the out loud, right? So now we're going to do the whisper.
Yeah.
Noorli. No, excuse me. Noorli. Now silently, nor breathe in, hold on Alim, exhale on high. Ya Noor, Ya Alim, Ya Hai. Alrighty. Let's close with, let's close this section with, may all beings be well. May